Good evening. My name is Eddie G. I'm also known as Four Question Eddie, and I'm known as the Fancy Dancer. My MIG group called me the Fancy Dancer because when I was a kid in the 30s, I took tap dancing lessons from Gene Kelly. He brought his sisters, two sisters and a brother, into Johnstown, Pennsylvania, still in Coal Town, and my aunt, Leo McGuire, played the piano for him, and he used to call me Eddie Glancy, the Fancy Dancer, and Clancy the Cop. Anyway, that's where that came from, and that four-question Eddie business came when I was at BARC. I was in an intensive step class down there, and Ray P., in the 10th step, asked each and every one of us to write down the answers to four questions. And these questions, I'll share them with you right now. Before I go to bed every night, I ask myself these four questions. The first one is, what did I do today that I like and respect myself for? The second question is, what did I do for somebody else today? The third question is, what did I see or hear that I like today that had nothing whatever to do with me? And that lets me know that my higher power, the God of my understanding, is doing for me the things I cannot do for myself. And the last question is, what problems do I have in my life today? When I was leaving to come over here tonight, I live on the 10th floor of Breakwater Towers over near where Points of America is, near Lagomar, and it's a lovely spot right on the ocean. And it's on the 10th floor. There's a little old lady that lives right next to me, and she had her door open as I was walking down the catwalk, and she said, "My, look at you." And I said to her, I had my coat over my arm here, and I said, "How do I look?" And she said, "Your fly's open." Anyway, this place brings back a lot of memories to me. I used to drink in the bar out there back. I arrived in Fort Lauderdale in 1957. I had a one-way ticket on a Greyhound bus. But anyway, make a long story short, that was one of my watering holes right here. You could get a steak for less than $3. Anyway, I was seeing a lady down in Hollywood, and I used to meet her at a place called Hemingway's on Dixie Highway. It's going back. Maybe you know that place. It was great. Great watering hole. Anyway, I met this lady down here, and she said, it was around midnight. She said to me, "You better go home. You had too much to drink." So anyway, I left there, and I started driving up Federal Highway about 3 or 4 blocks just south of Dania Beach Boulevard there where the High Life Fronton is. And I passed out at a light there, and when I woke up, I was in some sort of a crib-like arrangement. And there was a guy standing there. Anyway, I remember opening my eyes. I remember seeing this guy, and I'm in this arrangement. I said to this guy, "Where am I?" And he said, "You're at Broward General Hospital." And I said to him, "Who are you?" He said, "I'm your friend." I said, "I never saw you before in my life." He said to me, I said, "What's wrong with me?" He said, "You have a broken neck." I had these pulleys around my neck and the back of my neck and everything. And I said, "How long have I been here?" And he said, "3 days." 3 days. Anyway, it's just this, when I came over here tonight, it reminded me of that particular situation. Also, I had a phone call from my daughter, Jenny, out in California, and she knew I was going to be speaking here tonight, and she wished me well. And my daughter, Jenny, is a remarkable young lady. When I was removed from a beautiful family in 1977 by the Circuit Court of Broward County for the use and abuse of alcohol, I was subpoenaed in a Hollywood mall. I'm not proud of this at all. Anyway, I was subpoenaed. I was working for Sears, trying to sell insurance. Allstate Insurance Company was under the umbrella of Sears at that time. They were owned by Sears. Anyway, I got subpoenaed by the Broward County Sheriff's Department. I called my attorney, and I said, "I just got the subpoena. I got to be in court in about 3 days. Mary Lane wants to divorce me." And he said, "What the hell's taking her so long?" So, anyway, I wanted to tonight particularly, I see so many people that I know here over the years, and I have many heroes, and I want to recognize some of them. First of all, I want to thank Ken for getting me a ticket to this wonderful dinner. The steak was delicious. And I wanted to also thank Nancy for inviting me to speak tonight. I wanted to mention my friend Tim S., who was on the board here at one time. And I always wanted to mention one of my heroes also is Mickey over there from the Rustic Inn. And Diane is a hero, definitely. She saved my life one night. I had a stroke at a meeting at the Easier, Softer Way back. This is probably 15, 20, 30 years ago, maybe. I don't know how long it was. But she packed me in her car and took me over to Broward General, and I had had a TIA. And anyway, she really was one of my heroes. I see her and often. My daughter Jenny called me, and Jenny, when the time she was a little girl, every time she writes to me, sends me a card or a letter or anything, she always signs it, "I love you, Dad, no wax, Jenny." And the reason she says no wax is because when she was a little girl going to grade school, she had an assignment at an elementary school, and it was about early Roman history. So she said, "Do you know anything about this, Dad?" And I said, "Yeah, well, I know one thing." I said, "They had purchasing agents back in those days in early Rome, and they used to buy these beautiful marble columns. And sometimes they would pass them off as perfect. They would have little tiny cracks in them, and they would fill them with wax. And they really looked perfect. And so they were fake. I mean, it was a fraud sort of thing, but they would pass them off as perfect. And they would sign them off and use the word sincere, like we get the word sincerely. And when you hear that word sincerely, what it's supposed to mean is what I'm telling you is true. When I say I love you, I mean I really love you. And so Jenny always signs her letters no wax. And so tonight I thought about that when I was coming over here, because the people in Inner Group are really remarkable. North, South, and Central representatives here, they're so dedicated. They represent thousands of us here. It's where I get food for my mind. They keep me up to date. Actually, they are responsible for saving my life, because the big book, the 12 and 12, and all the literature and everything else, it's passed on to me in meetings over all these years. And as a result, I've been able to stay sober and lead a very remarkable, adventure-filled life. I was born in 1927 in La Trobe, Pennsylvania. And we moved to Johnstown when I was just about 2 years old. Grew up, I had three sisters, two brothers. We went to Catholic high school, Catholic family, this sort of thing. It was a steel and coal town. 7 miles of Bethlehem steel ran through the city, and it was full of coal mines. I grew up during the Depression years. We got a refrigerator when I was 10 years old, I think, our first one. Got our first car in 1937. I did well in school, fairly well. I mean, I played quarterback on the football team, the Crimson Crushers, and defensive back, ran back kicks, punts, stuff like that. Played for the state championship, Philadelphia, in 1943. I never finished high school. I got a diploma, but I never finished. I quit high school, went in the Navy. I was in a Navy combat unit called Lion 9. I trained at Lido Beach in Long Beach, New York. And I was trained for a specific mission to work with the 4th Marine Division to secure a Japanese naval base called Yokosuka in southern Honshu. It was before the SEALs, that sort of thing. Anyway, to make a long story short, we took a train out to the West Coast, and we took advanced combat training in a place called Tamforan, and that was a racetrack that was turned into a forwarding base. That's where Seabiscuit trained and ran, as a matter of fact, and we slept in their stables and this sort of thing there. Shipped out of Treasure Island, came up through the Marshall Islands and the Marianas, the Guam, Saipan, and Tinian, and places like that. On up into the Volcano Islands, that's where Iwo, Chichijima is right next door, and the Bonin Islands, and then on up into southern Honshu, and Harry Truman dropped the bomb. Probably saved our lives. The place was all shot up. Tokyo was leveled. Yokohama was leveled. Drank sake and a lot of it, and 3-2 beer, this sort of thing. We replaced all the windows and got things going over there pretty much. I left there in June of 1946, got discharged, and went to college at St. Francis University in September of 1946, graduated in 1950 with a degree in business administration. Went to work in New York City at B. Altman's on 34th and 5th next to the Empire State Building. worked my tail off there, and I simply couldn't handle it. It was just too much. I wasn't drinking that much or anything. I was pretty good. I'd never considered myself an alcoholic until the latter years of my drinking. I came back in, and I worked for commercial credit, repossessing cars, that sort of thing. Finally got a job as a salesman out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Traveled for a company out of Cincinnati, the Brenneman Hartshorne Company, the largest, one of the largest window covering companies in the United States. I represented them in eastern Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, Virginia. I could drink what I wanted to drink, go where I wanted to go, and do what I wanted to do. I never liked anybody looking over my shoulder. I left there and took a position with a 3M company out of St. Paul. I was in their Scotch tape division. And eventually, a man came through that had a brand new product called Scotch Cal. He hired six of us. I was hired in Cleveland, Ohio. I had five states. I worked out of Detroit and Chicago. We had to find markets for this product. I was hired away by a brewery in Cincinnati called the Burger Brewing Company. Pat Harrington, the vice president, was having lunch with me at the athletic club, and he said, "You must have made a hell of a lot of money. I have the best-looking beer trucks in the United States." I said, "You do." He said, "But I said, I don't make that much money. I got a company car and expenses." Anyway, he hired me. Said, "I'll make you a district manager." He said, "I'll give you twice the amount of money I pay." I worked with a distributor salesman down into Kentucky and Tennessee and southern Ohio. And anyway, I called him up after about 2 months, and I said, "I don't think I'm cut out for it." He said, "I heard all about it." Drank myself right out of that job. Nobody ever drank alone. I got an extra $100 a week. It was like getting $1,000 back in those days. That was in the 50s. Anyway, I decided to become a Catholic priest. I got a bishop down in Mexico to make arrangements for me to go to Loyola University in Chicago. Take an accelerated course in Latin in 2 years, I could have been ordained. I bought a one-way ticket on a Greyhound bus to Chicago. It was January the 3rd. Well, I had the ticket. I probably bought it the 1st or 2nd or whatever. And I was staying with my parents in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, before I left. And I got to thinking about it. They had a snowstorm. Temperature was like 0 degrees. So I didn't say anything to anybody. I went down to the local bus station, which was in the train station, and I traded in for a one-way ticket on a Greyhound to Jacksonville, Florida. So I arrive in Jacksonville at 11 o'clock at night. It's leaving. I jump on the bus. I had to get a ticket. I went up, got into Miami the next morning. I went down to the hotel, and after that noon, I went down to the finest hotel in Miami, which was the McAllister Hotel on Biscayne Boulevard. I didn't know where in the hell it was. Anyway, I got a room. It was like a closet down there. And hired a stenographer, made out 50 copies, got on the phone, and made some phone calls. And I found a personnel agency that had a company that was interested. I went over to Hialeah, got interviewed. Make a long story short, they said they'd call me a couple of days and let me know whether I was going to get the job or not. They represented Alcoa, International Nickel, Armco, Bethlehem, United States Steel, Youngstown Sheet and Tube, you name it, Chase, Revere, the Bang. I was up there to learn all the physical and mechanical characteristics of these products. And so after I was finished 7 months, president called me in and he said, "We're going to send you to Birmingham, Alabama." And I said, "I don't think so. I'm not going to Birmingham." And he said, "How about Greenville, South Carolina?" I said, "I'm not going there either." So he's looking at me and he said to me, "We don't have any jobs down there in Miami." I said, "Yeah, but that's what the job description was. It was going to be in the Miami's, an outside rep." He said, "You can work on the phones down there if you want to." He said, "We got 60 guys selling steel, structural, everything over the phones." I said, "No, I ain't gonna do it." He said, "Well, look, we have an agreement, so I'm going to send you down there, but they're going to hate to see you because there's no job. Get your company car, expenses, and no job. What a deal." So I go down there, and so I'm hanging out at the Elbow Room and Omar's tent and Sandbox and everything, all those wonderful places on the beach. I think I probably could have got elected mayor. Anyway, I'm driving up the beach one day, and I'm going by the Tradewinds Hotel and stop in there to have a drink. I used to like to drink in there. And I met a lady in there who was on vacation from Washington, D.C. Her name was Mary Lane. Mary Lane was ravishing. So anyway, I met her in the bar, and we had a couple of drinks and everything, and I suggested before she got back to Washington, she allow me to take her over to the Maikai, the finest Polynesian restaurant in the world. So I take her over there, and so we exchanged notes and had a couple of drinks, three or four drinks, whatever it was, and I said, "You know, maybe we ought to get married." I was 34, she was 27. She said, okay, but we got to tell my mother. So anyway, we got married. Make a long story short, we have four wonderful children, two daughters and two sons. And in 1977, that's when I was removed by the circuit court. A lot of years have gone by. In 1982, I was living on the Dania Cutoff Canal down there. And anyway, I was desperate. And I had had 10 years of making cameo appearances at the 12 Step House. I go in there like every 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months, once in a while, and I thought, this doesn't work. I never got a sponsor, never did the steps, never did. Anyway, I'm at the fifth chapter. I came out of a blackout one night over there, and I called this friend of mine who was in Sebastian, Florida. And by the way, before I forget, when I came into this program, I literally dove into this program. I forgot to mention, I was also in this program, I was an alcoholic and a skydiver. I think I might have mentioned that. I did my first skydive last July in Sebastian from 13,500 feet. It was accelerating. And the thing I was thinking about on the way over here is I wasn't at all frightened. I wasn't stressed out. I wasn't scared. I felt like I was wrapped in the arms of the Holy Spirit doing that. But when I dove into AA, I mean, I was scared. I mean, I had no idea. I thought, sure, I was going to die. I spent the first 5 weeks in the hospital. Joe T. helped me a lot. I ran into a guy at the old fifth chapter, and he said to me, you hang around the door. You never say who you are. You're in and out of here like a flash. What's your name? I said, my name's Eddie. He said, my name's Lou. He said, they call me Lou the Greek. He said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no. He said, you want one? I said, hell no, I don't want a sponsor. I was 55 years old. I thought, the life had passed me by. I was AA or amen for really. And he drew a line in the sand. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I'm going to give you an opportunity of a lifetime. It will completely turn your life around. So he said, this is your last chance. He said, there are a lot of people waiting in line for me to be their sponsor. He said, that's what I do. So make up your mind. So he was like a DI. He became a great personal friend of mine, a remarkable man. He was one of my heroes. And I went down to Bark, took an intensive course down there, and while I was there, we were on the 10th step. I had to write down to those four questions of what I just shared with you. And at that time also, I had to do something and finish it, something difficult, something that was going to require some work. I went home that night and I saw an ad in the paper for a dance instructor trainee at Arthur Murray's. So you know where the Victory is. So I go down there and there's a dance place right next to Victory. And there was a guy by the name of Jim who owned 17 studios. He said to this lady, would you dance with Mr. Glancy? And she said, okay. So she danced with me and he said, what do you think? And she said, he can't dance, but he's got rhythm. So he said, come back the next night. It was 4 or 5 nights. Finally, he realized that I was serious about this thing, you know. So he said, we have young people in here. He said, we charge $75 an hour. If you sign up with us, it's going to mean 3 hours a night, 5 nights a week for a year. If you renege on this thing, we're going to go after you. We're going to have a legal agreement signed and net witnessed, and you'll owe us a ton of money. That's $225 a night. Anyway, I called my sponsor. I don't care what you do. He said, as long as you call me. So I did. I finished that course, and anyway, in 1977, like I say, I was subpoenaed and got divorced and that sort of thing, and 5 years had elapsed. 1982 was my sobriety date. Nobody has a closer family than I do. I have two sons, two daughters. They're just wonderful, and they love each other. We have an annual reunion every year in North Carolina. The definition of friendship is, I heard one time, the inexpressible comfort of feeling safe with a person, having neither to weigh thoughts or measure words, pouring them all out, the chaff and the grain together, certain that faithful hands will take and sift them, keep what is worth keeping, and with a breath of kindness, blow the rest away. Anyway, it's great to be here tonight. I can't thank you enough for making all of you, making my life exciting, a real adventure. And I want to thank again Nancy and Ken and all my other personal friends in this program, my good friend Bob sitting back there. Anyway, it's great to be here, and Lord knows what I have in store for the rest of my life, but I'm looking forward to it, whatever it is. Thank you.